All right, let's get started. You be quiet.
On the air everywhere, this is New England Broadcasting.
You just be quiet. I'll take care of this.
Welcome to the Ron Van Dam Show. Hold on tight. Things can get a bit weird, if you like that sort of thing.
I'm going to talk. You just be quiet.
Whatever.
Love it. Good morning, good afternoon, good evening, good night. Yes, it's the Ron Van Dam Show. All right, that's enough. Welcome to the program. My guest later on in the program today is an extended interview with a gentleman named Mark C. Perna. He's a motivational speaker. And I have never in my life gone to see a motivational speaker because I have a feeling I would be ill-motivated. And here's why. You pay money, mostly. If not, if it's free, then you're asked to buy things. You pay money to see a guy stand in front of you, usually a guy, could be a woman, and they pace back and forth and they tell you what a piece of crap you are, how you have no motivation, nothing going on in your life, why you even living, what a piece of crap you are. And then they go on to tell you how wonderful things would be if you weren't a piece of crap. All you have to do, quite simply, is to exert yourself and be aggressive. And thus you will be successful at everything that you do. Sounds good. It's like, in many cases, it's like Trump. It's like a man standing in front of you saying, I have this snake oil. And if you ingest it, you will live forever. You will never die. You will be so healthy. You'll be 150 years old and you'll be bouncing around like a baby. It's the same thing. Here's the problem. And by the way, I'm not saying this in order to put down my guest. I'm just, because my guest is actually very good at this. I'm just saying, for the most part, see, what you got to realize, when you see motivational speakers, they're usually standing up there to figure out how they can make money off of you. That's their job. That's their game. You all come in here and I'm going to make money off of you. They make it sound like I do this for free because I want to improve everybody's life. If you really think somebody cares about you that much who doesn't even know you, then you really are delusional. Delusional. Maybe it's me. It's like going to a prayer tent meeting where there's an evangelist standing in front of you and the evangelist puts his or hers, I don't know, hand on the top of your head, your greasy little head, and says, and now the Lord puts into you a miracle shall occur. And all of a sudden, you weren't able to walk like for 30 years because you only have like one leg. And all of a sudden, excuse me for coughing right in your face. And all of a sudden, you get up and you start kicking your heels and stuff. And it's a miracle. It's a miracle. I can walk. And everybody in the audience goes, wow, it is a miracle. Little do they know that the guy that was just blessed by the evangelist happens to be the evangelist's brother who's in on the scheme. But that has nothing to do with motivational speaking. I don't even know why I brought that up. I guess it's because I'm skeptical about everything. And well, I should be. If you've lived life long enough, you will realize very few things are what they seem to be. There's an ulterior motive for just about everything. You've got to be savvy and smart. That's why kids have no idea. That's why kids shouldn't be making decisions ever, because they have no experience to know a decision that they're making is like really butt wrong, really wrong. Anyway, motivational speaker will stand up there for sometimes over an hour and convince you that you are a piece of crap and that you don't have to be a piece of crap. You can be a vital member of society and make millions of dollars in the process. And while you're listening to this stuff for an hour, you are always totally convinced, wow, if I just exerted myself a little bit, I could be rich. I could own the world. I could invent things, have companies. I could have successful relationships, successful marriages, successful friendships. I could rule the world if I just did these things that this person is telling me to do. And they come up with the stupidest things, like get up in the morning and open your eyes wide and make a list of things you want to achieve in that day. It all sounds so wonderful. You can picture yourself just walking on the walls and snapping your fingers and having a beautiful day and loving the world and loving your life. I guarantee you, when you leave the place, you go to bed, you get up the next morning, you still feel like crap. Unless the motivational speaker is in bed with you to motivate you through everything, then it doesn't work. Now, what if you were like Oprah and you could afford to have a full-time 24-hour motivational speaker live with you, sleep with you, eat with you, go to work with you? I guess it would be very, very wonderful at first. Couple of days of that become quite annoying. My point here is that motivation is only good as you're being motivated. Once you stop being motivated, you go right back to it, man. And probably worse. Oh, they told me all the stuff I can do, and apparently I can't do it. Oh, I even feel worse now. Now I know I can't do anything. It's a horrible feeling. It's just a horrible feeling. All right. Did you enjoy that? Did it make you feel any better? Huh? No? Yeah, probably not. Probably not. I guess I'm not a motivational speaker. I'm more of a realist. That's why I know the only way to motivate you to do anything is to hold up an adorable young little puppy. Aww. Nobody doesn't go aw when they see an adorable little puppy dog. Aww. Yeah, that's right. That's the one reaction I know I can get every single time without question. I always get that. Just hold up the puppy dog. But don't walk backwards. All right. Oh, okay. All right. I think I've used all the sound effects I care to use at the beginning of the program.
You are listening to The Ron Van Dam Show, refined entertainment for a sophisticated audience, who sometimes enjoy a good fart joke.
Before I settled down, I was dating this girl in my first year of college. And her name was Marcy. Marcy, if you're listening, how you doing, hon? We dated for about 8 months. It was probably the most exciting sexual experience of my lifetime. This woman, well, say woman, she was like about, no, maybe 19 or 20 years old, at the most. She taught me some stuff that was quite motivational, if you know what I'm saying. She was an artist. She was very motivating. She was so observant about everything, and just so smart. And sexually, she was just like fantastic, just fantastic. It was quite a swing of 8 months, I'll tell you that. But she was motivational to me. I think everybody that I've known has motivated me in one way or the other. In other words, if I had a relationship or hung out with somebody who was just horrible, just a horrible person, That motivated me not to be a horrible person like them. So even that was motivation for me. I think it was Obama who said, that great philosopher, Barack Obama, who said, this is a teachable moment. Those things are teachable moments. When you're sitting in a classroom with a teacher talking to you in a classroom, that's not a teachable moment. That's a sleeping moment. That's a moment to try to forget. That's a moment wasted in time. But when you're actually out in the real world and stuff happens to you, those are teachable moments. Those are the ones you're supposed to carry with you, and you're supposed to learn from them as to not make the same mistake twice. We all make the same mistake twice. We all make the same mistake 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9 times. Are they mistakes or are they teachable moments? Ooh, I don't know. My point here is that I have no point. We should learn from everything. So we do have a motivational speaker today, Mark C. Perna. His middle initial is C, and he tends to want to be called that. He's a good guy. We're going to be talking about millennials. I don't know what that means. I think it was anybody that was born after me, and millennials, I think they're from another planet. I don't know which one. I think it's Jupiter. And they roam the Earth, and millennials can vote now, so don't screw with them. do you remember the school shooting? I mean, everybody does, all the school shootings, and when the kids in Florida, Parkland, Florida, decided to tour the country and about gun violence and how the schools are not safe and this is a horrible thing and that the older people in our society are being assholes and that the younger people are so smart. And they are. And these kids went all across the country and did speeches. They impressed the socks off of me. That was motivational speaking. They were real, true, honest kids. And here's the deal, everybody. Those kids will be able to vote in the next election. So you better like regard them. And I'll tell you one more thing, which has nothing to do with what I'm talking about. If you're a woman in today's society, you better vote. Because if you don't vote, you are no human being. You're being attacked as we speak by many men in this country who do not regard you as anything but sexual beings. And if you don't stand up and say something about that right now, you will continue to be that. You have a president now who is actually verbally telling you this, telling you that you are nothing but sexual objects. He's told you this for the longest time, but you just thought it was a joke. Now it's not funny. If anything has happened to you in a sexually aggressive manner by a male at any point in your life, whether it be at work, at the office, or when you were in high school, for example, and you were accosted or maligned or sexually mistreated or even raped by a male who thought that that was just what men do, then you better get off your feet right now and start talking about this and start reacting to it, because no human being should be treated like that. It's about time that the men who don't realize that you are equal and not to be sexually abused, it's about time they got their little dope slap. And this is the time to do it. 1 out of 3 women, and I don't know if you know this, I checked it out. 1 out of 3 women, about 30%, were somehow sexually accosted at some point in their lives, most of whom have never said anything about it to anybody. They were either raped or sexually aggressed upon or made an advance to in work and being told, well, you can pursue it if you want to, but no one's going to believe you. If you complain, it's going to be at your own detriment. That type of attitude, man, you better stand up on your own 2 feet right now. because it's disgusting. And it's coming out of the closet as far as men are concerned. Men are starting to admit that, yeah, I do it. And your president, we have him on tape talking about grabbing women's pussies, excuse the expression. We have that on tape, and you've heard it, I'm sure. If you're not aware of what's going on, the president just yesterday mocking Dr. Ford's testimony about what happened to her. And whether you believe that Kavanaugh actually did that is not the point. She totally believes this happened, and she's expressing herself. And to be mocked by the president of the United States publicly in a speech? You got to do something about this, and you have the power to do it. You better take care of it. Oh, Ron, what are you doing? You're getting really crazy today. Can't help it, man. Can't help it. All right, Mark C. Perna is going to join us after this short commercial break. And it should be said that people really, really need a dope slap.
Are you aware that one in every seven Americans is in desperate need of a dope slap? Studies show that every 17 seconds in America, someone writes, says, or does something so incredibly stupid that they deserve to be slapped, and you can help. If someone you know commits an act of boneheaded stupidity, simply extend your hand with the palm facing to the side, draw your arm back, and deliver a sharp, solid blow straight across their forehead. It's called a dope slap. It only takes a moment to perform, but the lesson can last a lifetime. This has been a message from the American Dope Slap Association and Metro South Podcasting.
Mark Perna joins us now. He's written a book, Answering Why Unleashing Passion, Purpose, and Performance in Younger Generations. We could release that in all generations, to be honest with you, but of course, the younger generations are the ones that are up and coming and going to take over pretty soon. He's a strategic consultant, and he does keynote speaking all over the world, and this book is fascinating. I guess it comes in the category of motivation.
It does. It's really, how do you motivate anyone 38 and younger? Because that's kind of who I lump into the younger generations. Mm-hmm. I make it plural because there's two generations there. There's Generation Y millennials that we hear so much about. But then there's the generation coming right behind them, which is Generation Z. And how do you kind of unlock and unleash that passion, purpose, and performance in their lives?
Yeah. Now, how did you get into writing this book? Why did this topic come up for you? I know you talk about this frequently, but why now? Is it because?
Well,
yeah, go on.
Yeah, honestly, Ron, it came to a point. So I speak about this all over all over North America. Yeah. But what really came to bring this book about was that, you know, there are so many people. Anytime you read a book or see anything about younger generations today, it's largely negatively slanted. You know, they're lazy or entitled or something like this. And I go completely the other way. I think they're the most incredible generations to come down the pike. I think they're the most intelligent, resourceful, pit bull like generations that we've ever seen. When they see a want to in their life, they'll move heaven and earth to get to that want to. But our challenge as parents, educators, and employers is getting them to actually want something. And so that's where the game is played. And so I wanted to write a book as to how do you create that want to in their life, because I've always believed that if the want to is strong enough, the how to will come. And this kind of connects all the dots on how to do that and understand them and kind of what makes them tick.
Through history, as far as I can see, most younger generations have always rebelled. Using that word, I was in a generation that rebelled against the establishment, that kind of thing. There doesn't seem to be much rebelling going on. There seems to be more intelligent questioning.
Wow, that is so intuitive, Ron. Most people don't catch that. You're right on, and I'm probably in the same generation as you are.
Yep.
And so I've actually nicknamed them the Y generation, W-H-Y mm-hmm. generation, because they need an answer to that question for everything they do. And you're right on. They're absolutely asking that question because they actually want to make things better. And they actually want to try to improve on things. So, you know, people from our generation, yours and mine, when we ask a young person, 38 and younger to do something, they look back at us and they say, well, why should I do it that way? Or why should we do it that way? And most of us in the older generations take that as a smart aleck response. But what they're really trying to say is, why do we do it this way? Because there has to be a a better way to do this. There has to be some way to use Google something, or you know, put it in the cloud. Yeah. There has to be a way to streamline this, and yet we don't give them the opportunity to do that.
Yeah. Let's talk about the Google something in the cloud, because that is the television media aspect of what these younger generations are. They are kids that sit in front of computers all day, although that goes back actually like 20 years ago too, because we used to just sit in front of the television all day, so I guess what's the difference? But they're always gaming. They're looking at small screens. They don't socialize. They don't talk to each other. They're just involved in their electronic media contraption. They're always on Facebook. They're always they're in a shell. That's the picture that for some reason has been painted of these upcoming generations.
Well, very true. And in fact, you know, older and younger generations, what I call the generational divide, you know, between us is trying to understand that that's simply the way the world is today. Technology is just kind of wrapped and cloaked around us. And so they're going to connect to it in every way that they can. But I'll give you a great example in my own home. I've been a full-time single dad for 22 years, and my kids today are 31 and 29 years old.
Congrats.
And so my youngest son, you know, when I write a text message to somebody, it's written like it's a letter.
Yes.
You know, there's a salutation. There's an opening statement. Hope you're doing well. You know, there's the body of the text, and then there's a close. Hey, have a great day.
That's
love
funny.
You, Dad.
That's funny.
And I will get back one letter from him, and it's K. And it's like, and I laugh every time because he didn't have the time to add the O. Right?
Yeah.
He couldn't do OK. It had to be K. And I'm like, so you know, and for the longest time it was frustrating until I realized that, you know, it's just, again, it's in the streamlining of just doing things in a quicker way. And the more we allow them to kind of connect to that, the more we drive them further and faster.
Yeah.
And I tell audiences this all the time, business and industry, educators, parents, all the time, is you can either look at them like they're a challenge to be overcome, or you can look at them as the most tremendous resource that can be unleashed, you know, in front of you. And that's why I wrote the book, so people can do that.
Mm-hmm.
So answering why is all about how do you do that? How do you capture their interests? And how do you create that want to?
When there is such a disconnect between generations, I think there always has been, but there certainly is now as well.
Oh, there always has been. Yeah. So, you know, now there is that big generational rift. Because, well, frankly, you know, older generations think the younger generations are missing it. And the younger generations look at the older generations and go, you're clearly missing.
It's always been.
And so it's just looking at each other instead of understanding that the differences can actually be benefits and values to each other. And that's what I'm trying really kind of as a wake-up call kind of way is to here's how they are, here's how they think, here's what makes them tick. And if you understand that, you can engage and communicate in a much more effective way.
Yeah. I mean, I always looked at you know, as kids grow older and they go to college, it's like, oh, all they want to do is sit around and smoke pot. And then I say to myself, wait a minute, that's all I did. Wait a second.
Right.
A second.
Yeah. Well, something's never changed, Ron. Something's never changed.
Wait a second here. Okay. All right. What is the reaction to your thesis here, what you're looking at? I assume it's been well received.
Yeah, it's been remarkably well received. Publishers Weekly gave it a positive review, said it was perceptive, reasonable, and thought-provoking arguments all, which I was very proud as a first-time book author, because they rarely review a first-time, you know, book author.
Right.
And the reviews on the internet have been extremely positive. So the reception has been wonderful. I've been doing large speaking events and selling out books, and it's you know, it's available on Amazon and other places as well. So it's it's been wonderful.
Right.
I appreciate you asking.
Good. Let me get into one other piece of this, and that is not the way that these generations are now as they're growing up, but what do they do when they get into the workforce, the workplace? Because then they're somewhat melding into the other generation financially. they're not sheltered anymore. They're out into the world. And for most generations, that's always a smack in the face. Are they being well prepared for what's to come in their employment years?
No, for the most part, they're not. You know, there's exceptions to this, but for the most part, they're not being well prepared. And a lot of that isn't necessarily their fault. A lot of it is simply in the way we reared them and the way our culture is dealing with them today. So they're not prepared to really get in and meld for the most part. Now, they're adapting, as well as, you know, some of their employers are trying to adapt as well. But they're not coming out with the professional and technical skills that they need, along with their academic rigor. So, I mean, there's a lot of academic knowledge in them, but they don't have a lot of those professional skills and being able to kind of connect the dots as to how they fit within the workplace. So, but that goes both ways. You know, again, they're amazing if you can unleash them, but business and industry is having a tough time trying to understand why they're different. And now we're at the point where actually, you know, millennials are moving into management positions within business and industry, and they're finding that managing, you know, their own generation is a challenge, because now that they're put into the position of having to manage them, they're having to make those connections and truly understand the power of, you know, both, you know, academic knowledge, technical skills, professional skills, work ethic, punctuality, those kinds of things. So they're putting it all together, and I think, again, I think they're going to be the next greatest generation, you know, to come down the pike once we unleash that. And so that's kind of why I wrote Answering Why.
Not to get political or anything, although I guess I am doing that, it seems that the biggest gap in generation is in a political sense, where if these new generations got involved in politics and actually held seats in local government and beyond, that this would be an amazingly beautiful feat, because politics and government is usually run by people that are over 60 years old, and yet their constituents are really in their 30s. It kind of never really melds. Maybe this generation can change that.
I'm with you. I think there's a great opportunity for them to change it. And I think they're starting to understand that they are quite the force out there. I mean, right now, when I say younger generations, 38 and younger, you know, that is literally the largest population of people right now in the United States. So it's a tremendous block of people, and they have to be you know, understood and accepted for how extraordinary they are. But you have to get them to want something. If you can't get them to see what I call light at the end of the tunnel, and I talk about that a lot, you know, in the book, is if you can't get them to see that light at the end of the tunnel, either in business, in school, or even at home, you'll get no action from them. They will not move forward because they're very comfortable. And I cover that a lot in the book with a metaphor that I call hearing the branch creak. So they need to, at times, be uncomfortable so they focus, they plan, and they take action.
Yeah. This may be a little off topic, but I was so impressed with that generation, with the school shooting situation, where they, when the gun control, where they actually stood up and started marching across America and uniting these kids who couldn't even vote yet, although they will very soon, had the ability to do this, and I was so incredibly impressed with them, then I became incredibly disappointed with my generation that kind of let time tick by and didn't do anything anyway. And that was such a great indication to me of that divide politically and socially.
Yeah, well, I mean, the young people today want to give back. You know, Deloitte, who's you know, the global accounting and consulting firm, did a survey of millennials about 15, 16 months ago, and what they came out with was astounding to me, because they said 68% of female millennials and 64% of male millennials, so two-thirds of that generation, literally plan to leave their current job by the year 2020. I mean, that's a cataclysmic shift in workforce. Yeah, it's a cataclysmic shift in workforce development, because they, and the number one reason given, and it was the number one reason given by far, is that they no longer want to work in an organization where pursuit of the almighty dollar is the only outcome.
Wow.
They want to work in an organization that gives back. They want to work in an organization that makes a difference. They want to work in an organization where the pride of their contribution will add to the greater good. And I think that's a remarkable thing. I think it's a remarkable remarkable trait, but business and industry and the workforce today is having a difficult time trying to connect those dots because so many businesses today, the goal is to make money.
Correct.
But but it's those organizations that tout we're just making money, or certainly that's the only, you know, benefit to the community. They're the ones who are burning and churning through people because they can't keep them because it's not appealing anymore. They want an organization where they can you know, make a difference.
Well,
which is wonderful.
Yeah, I mean, the vehicle will always be to make money corporation wise. But what I think they're starting to understand, thanks to these millennials, is that you've got to be happy in what you're doing. And when you're happy and comfortable, and you want to go to work, and you're fulfilling your own needs, you're going to make money. But not until. And I think that's the shift. Is that you can do both, not just make money.
That's correct. Yeah. You can do both.
Yeah. Interesting. Well, I got to read this book. I have got to read this. This is like important. And there are so many generations, X, Y, Z. I have no idea what they are. I guess.
You just named the bottom three, so you got it. X, Y, and Z. That's good. And that's where they sit. That's where they sit today. And you know, and the book can be found at Amazon. It can be found also at bookstores. Amazon's always, to me, the easiest place to get anything. You know, it's called Answering Why. But I also, you know, for you know, you, Ron, as well as your audience, is for anyone who visits markcperna.com. That's my website.
Yep.
So MARKC is my middle initial, Perna, PERNA, .com. There's a free resource section where you don't have to sign up to get any of this. You can just download it. But, you know, there's an action guide. There's a, you know, parent-child career conversation starter. There's 30-second ways to maximize interactions with today's younger generation. And there's a book study guide for the book so that any organization can drive it through their whole organization to truly understand how do you take the, you know, principles in the book and then apply them to whether it's an education setting, a business setting, or even in your home, how you can kind of take it to the next level and understand them. So all that's free, and anyone can download any of that and send it wherever they want. So, but all that's available.
Great. It's Answering Why, Unleashing Passion, Purpose, and Performance in Younger Generations. Mark C. Perna, thank you so much for your time today.
Thank you so much, Ron. It was an honor to talk with you.
Thank you. You take care. Bye-bye.
All right.
All right, that'll do it for today. You have yourselves a wonderful, wonderful day. Until next time, like tomorrow, I wish you peace.